It's Sunday, May the 13th, 2018. You're moving at the speed of creativity with Wesley Fryer, narrowcasting from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Well, good afternoon, and welcome to a podcast that I'm excited to be able to share. I'm going to have a bit of an introduction here, but the bulk of this podcast is going to be an interview that I had this past week with Blake Pardue, who is a fantastic middle school French teacher at our school and has been innovating in a lot of different ways, but most recently using the newest version of Explain Everything on the iPad. And I wanted to have a chance to reflect a little bit with him, not only because this is just a good process, but also because there were a lot of pieces to this instructional strategy and use of technology that I wasn't present for. I was able to assist and help in parts, but I wanted to have a chance to learn, and we did as a result of our conversations. And so what I thought I would start out with today, and by the way, happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there, I thought I would just do a little bit of a reflection on instructional coaching, what instructional coaching is, why it is so important, and also some of the lessons learned that I've had after being able to be an instructional coach for a number of years. But first, just what is it? So for 4 years in UConn, I worked in UConn Public Schools prior to coming to Cassidy School, and I'm currently the Director of Technology at Cassidy, just finishing up my third year. And so for those previous 4 years, the last two were going back in the classroom after finishing my doctorate and teaching fourth and fifth grade STEM. But the first 2 years, they had a grant that allowed me to work part-time in the district as an instructional coach. And I worked with a group of about 10 to 12 teachers. I would say most intensely probably with maybe about six or eight of those teachers. And I was able to have some whole group time with those teachers where we met and I introduced them to some new technologies, some new strategies. Really, that was building on the whole idea of showing what you know with media. So I was starting that website at that time. I started in 2013, showwithmedia.com. And really encouraging teachers to, you know, utilize technology in creative ways. But instructional coaching doesn't have to be focused along those lines, of course. I have been a technology integrator, I guess probably since the late 1990s, when I was at Rush Elementary School and fortunate to be in a teaching role where half of my time was teaching students classes where they would come to me by themselves as like the specials teacher, but then the other half of the time where teachers would be able to bring their class and I'd be able to meet with them and work with them. So I've been doing instructional coaching for a while, and I think one of the most important keys for successful instructional coaching and specifically technology coaching is to definitely have a coach who is a certified teacher. The goal of instructional coaching, in my mind, is to really further develop the teaching skills and the experiences that students have in the classroom through collaboration and through feedback and through a process by which the partner teacher can, you know, offer up ideas for things that they would like to do, things they're interested in, but also the instructional coach is able to bring to the table technologies, strategies, some things that the classroom teacher may not have been exposed to before or may not have the confidence to do themselves independently, but with the assistance of an instructional coach, with some hand-holding, if you will, which would not only involve some professional development and some time to learn about a skill, but also just coming into the classroom, teaching a demonstration lesson, co-teaching, you know, being able to co-teach some of the technology elements, being there as students are using the technology, troubleshooting issues. You know, it's just a hugely reassuring thing when you're trying something new with technology to have someone who's a little more adept with the technology and hopefully familiar with not only the steps and ins and outs of using the website or the app or whatever the tool is, but also able to troubleshoot and be a second pair of hands and a second teacher in the room when it comes to helping kids with passwords or with a machine that's not working and functioning or whatever it might be. So instructional coaching, in my experience, in public school is generally pretty rare, and it's oftentimes poorly funded. Sometimes, as it was when I was in UConn school, it can happen when a grant is obtained, and that can be a great thing, but I really, really believe that instructional coaching and technology coaching is an essential today for successful teaching and learning, because we are living in such a time of dramatic change. We're all lifetime learners, you know, whether we have obtained a doctorate or whether we've, you know, obtained our undergraduate degree or we're in school. I mean, all of us are learners because there's new things coming out all the time. And so this paradigm of education, one really important way that it has changed is that we no longer, you know, go to school and sort of get the majority of the knowledge and skills that we're going to need in sort of a static sense. And then we go to, you know, move into the classroom and teach that for a career of 20 or 30 years or however long we're going to be in education. We really have to continually sharpen the saw. And this is not just true for teachers who are explicitly teaching technology classes that involve computers and, digital literacy. This is true for everyone. All of us are living in a time where, of course, access to information has exploded, but the tools have become so powerful that allow us to not only receive and obtain that information, but also process that, filter that, and then remix that, create something different with that information, and then communicate that to an audience. And so that process looks different across different grade levels, across different content areas, but the need that we have for assistance, I think, should be irrefutable. And it's really important for our administrators to understand this, because it's not a traditional role that we've had in school of having the instructional coach or the tech integrator. Now, certainly in many cases, librarians do wonderful integration work with teachers. But, you know, librarians are saddled with a lot of different things. And so I certainly am, at this point in my career, a real advocate for instructional coaching. And I'm very thankful that in my job as the director of technology at the Cassie School, I have some small chances to be able to be an instructional coach. And I probably should make that clear. We have about 900 students in pre-K through 12th grade at our school and about 170 full-time and part-time faculty and staff. And so we only have two of us full-time to provide all of the technical assistance as well as whatever instructional coaching, but we've got a bigger team because there are representatives in each of our four divisions that are designated to be basically liaisons working with teachers, and then our librarians assist in that role as well. And so we do have a technology team, but a lot of what the technology team addresses up to this point has been more, needs that involve our student information system, our grade book. We have a process of teachers providing comments and feedback at different times of the year for students that parents access through the report cards. And in some cases, particularly with one of our librarians, there definitely has been and continues to be some instructional coaching. But instructional coaches can enhance lessons. I believe they are able to bring in and should be able to bring in technology tools that can really take lessons further or in different directions than they may have gone previously. They can introduce new tools and strategies, but the key to a successful technology coaching experience, and it really is an experience, it's not just a one-time, hey, I'm going to, you know, throw some stuff at you and hope it sticks to the wall, but it really is that follow-up. You know, it's really like a consultant where you're able to make an appointment and go on a conference time or after school. Conference time is usually the best to meet with the teacher and to plan together and then to go ahead and teach the lesson and to lead the lesson together. The key is relationship, trust, and really a commitment to mutual growth. It's certainly been the case in my experience that as I am growing as a teacher and as an instructional leader, and I'm sharing my own growth and some of those ideas and strategies, you know, it's a mutual thing, and it's not just you know, one person's not doing all the talking, one person's not doing all of the growing. So I've already shared a little bit about my experiences in UConn Public Schools as an instructional coach. As I mentioned, that did involve some whole group learning time, but mostly it was individual appointments and meetings with teachers. And I'll include this link in the podcast show notes, but one of the things I started at UConn, and they since have changed their main website, and so I think their header graphic on this website actually is no longer hosted and available. It was like a Flash file. But the website is still there because it's hosted by Google. It's a blogger site, and it is showcase.uconnps.com. And I created this as a way to celebrate as well as share some of the lessons and the work that we were doing, and to do that publicly, not just to do that privately behind a login, you know, behind a password, because I really wanted the ripple effects of that to potentially extend beyond the walls of the school buildings where I was working and even the district, because there's so much value in being inspired by the work that others are doing. And in many cases, the work of instructional coaches is the work of innovator pioneers in technology. And so that is the story of what we're about to hear with Blake Pardue. I totally believe and know that Blake is an early adapter innovator of different technologies. You know, Blake was doing, or Mr. Pardue, maybe as I should say, was doing, you know, some fantastic things with pen pals, using the ePals website to connect his French students, as he'll talk about, to other classrooms in Paris, France, and in Africa. He had been utilizing technologies to be able to document with photographs, taking virtual field trips, having students, you know, make things like Google Slideshows. And so anyway, I don't want to steal all his thunder, but, you know, this certainly wasn't a case of something that started with me. I'm just kind of coming alongside, or trying to come alongside Blake and assist him in some of the ways, in this case, that he wanted to use technology, heard about potential, saw potential, specifically using the iPad and the Explain Everything app, and wanted to take that further. Finally, I'll just share a few lessons learned from instructional coaching. This first one is huge. It's the importance of seeing, acknowledging, and celebrating teacher innovation. You know, it can be very easy to feel isolated, to feel alone, and to feel like you're an outlier, and to be an outlier in your school building, in your school district, especially if you're, you know, trying new things and stepping out. And so I have found, since I've been at Cassidy for 3 years, there's huge value in simply seeing the kinds of innovative teaching strategies and learning strategies that teachers are employing, and being able to document those, in some cases with media, in some cases enhancing those, and being able to celebrate those. And so I did bring that same idea of the showcase to Cassidy School, and I'll include this link in the podcast show notes, our learning showcase. And I don't like to call it a technology showcase, because I really think it's important that we focus on the learning. You know, an instructional coach or a learning coach is really, shouldn't be there in my mind to say, let's just use more technology. Sometimes that's a trap that teachers and even administrators can fall into, into thinking, oh, we've bought all this technology and let's just use it. It should always be thoughtful. It should always be intentional, and it should always be focused on the learning. So our website is called showcase.cassidy.org. Again, this is a blogger site, and I've done something or did something with UConn and the same with Cassidy. It's called a CNAME domain change. So, you know, our main website is www.cassidy.org, but you can have an address like the word showcase that precedes the period and basically takes the place of the www in the web link. And not only can that make the link shorter and easier to share with others, but it also directly and immediately conveys to the audience and whoever is visiting that site, ah, this is a website that is connected to Cassidy School, or in the case of the UConn School Showcase, it's connected to UConn. And so that's important. The second lesson learned I'd share is that the willingness to take risks and try new things is really the most important key to a successful instructional coaching experience. We are at our school embarking, I think, on an exciting journey using a system called Folio, and we are challenging teachers in the next year to set stretch goals for themselves in terms of things they want to learn, ways that they want to grow, and then they'll be working with a different individual. I think it's on a 3-year rotation, whether that's a peer that they self-select, that's a department chair or grade level leader, or it could be their supervisor, their principal, or as we call them, division director. And so anyway, sometimes teachers are under the mistaken impression that, gosh, I've got to know all this technology. I've got to be able, you know, to know this first before I try this with my students. And that's the beauty of working with a learning coach or an instructional coach, is that many of those technical things can be addressed by the instructional coach and can be addressed together. And so really it's the willingness to try something new that is the key. Reflection is also essential. So I'm very thankful for the chance to have been able to do this reflection with Blake. One of the things that I don't know completely came out in the recording that we made was the realization that for his students' projects, which included a written paragraph and a picture, a recording of the student saying their paragraph, and then a video. One of the things, and he's in the process, I think, this week of doing this, is that for that to be a shareable video, the students actually have to press the record button and explain everything, push play on the video, and then the recording of their video will actually be exported as that final video. And so what we ended up coming up with as a result of this conversation that I'm about to share with you was that that piece of the workflow was just missing for students and still needed to be done. And one of the great things about this new version of Explain Everything, which we did end up paying a little bit for per student, is that all of those projects are saved in the cloud. And so as was the case with other projects using Explain Everything, the students had to use the same iPad. They had, you know, if somebody else had used those iPads as their library devices that are being checked out in this case, for most of them, I think actually middle school foreign language does have 4 of their own iPads now, but the majority of those iPads have been checked out. You know, that data and that content could have been erased. And so anyway, it's a benefit that we were using the cloud hosted version of Explain Everything. And hopefully, and I'll be touching base with Blake this week, he's going to create a YouTube playlist of these different student projects, and I will add that to this podcast as soon as that is obtained. So, last thing I wrote down under lessons learned is that the technology role is key. And this is so important because the bar has been lowered in some respects with apps and websites that have a much easier graphical user interface, and they oftentimes can be very navigational for students to be able to figure things out, for teachers as well. And I would actually put forward the app and website Book Creator, which I'm hopefully going to be able to do a reflection with 4 of our teachers, 2 lower division, 1 middle division, and 1 upper division teacher, who all did projects this year using the Book Creator app, and specifically the web version that's usable on Chromebooks. And the tech role, even though, and I was amazed, and at the last project that we did with 7th graders, every 7th grader at our school did a book project, and it was a service learning initiative, and students took these books and shared them with kindergarten and first grade kids at a local public school. And this just happened a couple weeks ago. It was wonderful how few technical questions we ran into, and that was really a large tribute. I mean, we definitely did our best to introduce this and help students understand, you know, steps and procedures. But the fact that the website has been so well designed and the tools well designed leads to that. However, there are always technical things which come up. In the case of iPads that Blake is going to be talking about, our mobile device manager, which we shifted to last summer, called Tab Pilot, it is essential that someone is there to help facilitate the process of managing the apps, in this case, managing purchases and accounts, and then figuring out, you know, how to use these new apps and how we can utilize them successfully with students. Access points, you know, we ended up trying a similar project last year, but one of the biggest things we did over the summer was we doubled the bandwidth to the whole middle school building, our middle division building, and I think that had a huge impact because it improved the connectivity, and we also ended up activating another access point inside the room of Blake and his students. And so anyway, those technical things are really important. In some ways, I'm fortunate at our school that our instructional, our technical side of the house within the technology department is just one. You know, we've only got two people and we do it all along with others that are on our tech team. But, working hand in hand and being able to have a responsive technology department that can help meet those needs, is really critical because you can understand, you know, fully how to use an app and things can be working great when the connectivity is fast. But, you know, if the connectivity is not there or there are other kinds of technical issues that require the intervention of the technology department, it's very important that you've got that cooperation. So, fortunately, that's the one thing I do enjoy is being able to have that hat and being able to, work those issues. Issues, whether it's stuff with our firewall or, you know, with our wireless network or whatever the case may be. So, a little bit of an introduction. I'm not sure exactly how long that's been, but that may actually be about as long as the interview with Blake. I think that was about 20 minutes. So I think this interview runs somewhere between 15 and 20 minutes. I will include some links to resources about Blake, and I hope to also showcase this project on our learning showcase website for Cassidy School. We don't yet have that, but I think after the playlist of YouTube videos comes out, I'll be, you know, writing a post about that and also putting that into the learning community that we've started on Google+, and then hopefully here at the end of the year, I'm going to have a chance to share some success stories about some projects that different teachers have done. Again, really seeing them, acknowledging them, and celebrating them. It's really an important thing to do, and I'm thankful to have a chance to do that publicly with all of our faculty gathered together at the end of the year. So, without further ado, here it is, the interview with fantastic middle school French teacher Blake Pardue, talking about lessons learned using Explain Everything and his student collaborative project this year with pen pals that live in Africa and in Europe in France. Hello, it is May 8th, 2018, and this is Wes Fryer. I'm here at Cassidy School with Blake Pardue, and Blake is one of our, I would say, early adapter innovators trying new things with our technology, especially with iPads and Explain Everything, and I asked him if I could interview him a little bit to share some of what he's done this year with Explain Everything, and especially some of the lessons learned. Because I've done a lot with Explain Everything through the years, but he's actually done more with the new version than anyone else that I know. So, Blake, welcome. Can you tell folks who are listening just a little bit about yourself, what you teach here, and maybe just a short snippet of how you came to be here at Cassidy School teaching French?
Right. I'm Blake. I am middle division, middle school French teacher, grades 5, 7, and 8. I came to Cassidy after spending a few years teaching French abroad in India and Ethiopia. I came back home to Oklahoma to teach Cassidy to start a family. So my initial, in my classes, I like to try using different new technology, essentially because the kids respond well to new technology. The kind of PowerPoint and Google Slides, they've been there and seen that, and it's a bit repetitious for them. So this is just kind of a new, it's past Prezi, it's just new for them to try and work on a project And that's generally why I looked for something else like Explain Everything.
And tell a little bit about your pen pal project, because for a number of years, you all have had pen pals. Talk a little bit about how that came to be, and then the kinds of interactions you've done with the pen pals in the past.
I think probably my second year teaching here, I decided that we should have pen pals. That's the classic class project for a language classroom. And so I went through a site called ePals, and they facilitate, it's a platform that facilitates exchange between teachers. They originally had a great system, but they totally modified their approach. They were Cricut, bought them out, and they changed the way they communicate and collaborate, so it was less appealing. So then I decided to just look for other things to do, to exchange communication, email, and videos. So we do different projects. We do handwritten correspondence. We do have done MP3 interviews or recordings. And exchange those
and
via,
so your kids
via
do them
email.
In
right.
French,
so
and then
our
they're
kids,
doing it in English because they're learning English.
Right, so they would do something in French to present themselves or present a topic, download it, and then we'd exchange it via email
right.
in the past. And then I also wanted to do video. So exchanging video traditionally was, it's not very convenient with email. So I was looking for a new way to exchange video, and I've used Seesaw for that, which is good. Seesaw, you simply just use your basic Seesaw, and you do the blog. So you
and so that worked as far as
that
them
works.
Being able to see
it works
your
for them to be able to see.
That was the one way.
That was one way
of publishing
to do exchange video, which I'm working on now.
Did they do any comments back yet?
Not yet. So we have but it has worked.
And is this the same class that you've been connected with for a number of years? And
yeah, I have two classes. One class is in Africa. So they have a little bit more difficulty using the same technology as we do because of their bandwidth and things like that. And then one class is in France.
Okay.
So we do similar activities. And exchange gifts, and et cetera.
And you've done things like tours of the school, and they've done tours of their school. And
so I've done, my eighth grade does each student, they're in groups, and they will present part of the school in French. They'll record themselves with an iPad and go around and present the science classroom. They'll present the chapel or the cafeteria. And they'll just be little segments that they do half French, half English, present it in French, give an opinion in English. They'll send me their video. The easiest way was through Google Classroom. I make an assignment in Google Classroom, makes it easier to turn in things to keep it organized. I download all those onto my computer, and then I'm now putting them into an iMovie. And I'll put...
Oh, that's the one you're working on now.
Yeah, so that I'll put all collate all of that and put it onto YouTube for a video.
And this also, we just did a GeoMap or a little workshop yesterday. Maybe if you want
that
to,
that is the thing that
we
I
could
find
take
time
these short clips.
That'd be
and
great.
I could help you if you
yeah,
want to.
Yeah, yeah.
But taking those little clips and then they could
and
click
they
on
click
the chapel
on, see where
and there's
is.
The video.
Yeah,
click
right.
on the you know
yeah,
cafeteria.
Yeah, yeah.
There's always more.
And so my seventh grade, the old way was to do a Google Slides presentation of the school.
Right.
So I do, one year does a slide presentation, the other one does a movie.
Okay.
Not wanting to do Google Slides anymore, I decided, let's try Explain Everything.
And this was last year was the
this
first
was
year
last,
for that?
2 years ago was my first year to try Google Classroom, or Explain Everything. But I ran into big problems with that because not all of my 14 students could join and collaborate on the same project at the same time.
And to be clear, so we purchased the classic version of Explain Everything, which Explain Everything has gone through some different iterations with versions that are available, and their newer version allows for live collaboration. And I think one of the big challenges we ran into was internet bandwidth.
Yeah.
Because
Yeah, so over last summer, we doubled bandwidth for this building, and I think that led to some more success this year, as well as perhaps some different things.
So if there's a teacher who's looking to use Explain Everything and collaborate on one project, if they have low bandwidth, it'll only allow 5 kids on at a time, and everyone else gets kicked off. So that was the issue.
Right.
Is that
it was
like frustrating. 5 kids at a time to work on a project, and so I ended up probably just doing Google Slides.
Okay.
So, and then so once we got that issue fixed this year, that was fine. That was it. So all of my kids could jump on to the same project.
And that was about 15 or how many?
So that was the most? So I had total 27 students, 2 different classes working on the same project.
Synchronously then about 13,
essentially, yeah,
14.
Right. And that was good. I ended up deciding not to do that because that was working, but then the size of the project got to be too big.
Because they were doing videos inside.
Because
each
student's slide, I asked them to do 4 things, which is so cool, and this is why Explain Everything is so good. I wanted them to do a video, because again, they're sending this to their pen pals, and the pen pals, for pen pals to see your kid, to see your pal, is kind of the biggest motivating factor.
It's the face reveal.
It is. And so each slide had 4 components. One, and they were all presenting different areas of the school. One, was going to be a video of themselves. A video of the place where they were.
Okay.
The first was going to be a video of themselves. So they're presenting themselves. What are they like? Little things about them. I'm Jack. I like this and that and this and that. And then they did a picture of the place that they're presenting. So, without audio, attached to it. So it's just a picture of the cafeteria. Then there's a text box that describes the place. And then there's a voiceover where they read that description of the place. So there's 4 parts.
Yeah.
So that times 27 got to be gigantic.
Right.
And when we were trying to save what we had done, each kid, it wasn't saving correctly.
Right. And to back up just a little bit, so as the technology director, one of the things, in addition to bandwidth, you know, was checking out this Explain Everything version that for collaboration, because our kids have Google accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And so we activated an account that had a code, right,
mm-hmm.
that then they joined
right.
similar
They're all
to
on my...
a Google Classroom where you
right.
got an invitation code. And then all of the students, but was that was just to that slideshow, right? Didn't that invitation code get them into the same
It got
slideshow?
Into my, right, so it was my teacher
Your teacher
code.
Account.
Yeah,
but,
so
but,
they
but,
got
but,
into
it.
And then they can join, right, so it was all one slideshow.
But was it to, like, sort of a collection or a folder, or was it to that one slideshow? Because what you ended up doing was they did separate.
Right.
Right.
So it was a folder. So right.
Okay.
So they had to have.
Because that's part of the reason I want to have this conversation, because I was involved a little bit there in the beginning and some different things happened.
Right.
And this was the first time we've had any of our faculty use this new version. That enables that. And so experiencing
right.
that. So anyway, you're saying that
it became too big
for everyone to be in one file.
Right. So you have to think, when you do this as a teacher, how big is the in file going to be?
Right. Well, and what is the contents? If they hadn't
right.
put video in,
no.
then that would have reduced.
Sure.
But because of those
exactly.
different elements,
so how,
and times 27, it just made for an unwieldy file.
Right.
This is
file. Big.
Yeah.
Because
I think every time they were accessing it, I think, it was downloading that entire file
sure,
to their device, and it was updating. And
right.
It's a lot better.
And it couldn't, it just couldn't
right.
handle it.
Yeah.
And so what I did was, and then you've got the issue of kids remembering where their slide is, and it was just, it kind of got
it's
messy.
A little wild.
It did. Because you had 27 slides, and like, they wanted to start over, and you know, and it just grew. So this simple solution so far has been to each student creates their own project. So we're not collaborating on the same thing anymore. They create their own project. And what I did to export that to me, there are probably different ways to do this. There are. But what I ended up doing and I thought this would be the simplest thing, was that they came to me and they airdropped it to me.
Oh, okay. They airdropped the project. Ah.
So I would put it on.
So they ended up creating, hello, we're doing a recording, a little podcast. That's okay.
That's okay.
It's all right. We're all good because we can edit, so. So that's interesting. So they ended up doing it on their own device, kind of as a standalone, and then.
Yes. They would, when it was done, they would come to me and they'd airdrop it to me and I accept it.
Okay. So when you're combining these, instead of merging them, and we were just looking at the merging, because the merging for Explain Everything lets you take two projects together, but you really have 27 projects that you want to put together.
That's right.
We may want to because you're wanting to end up with video, right?
Correct.
So we may want to export each of those projects as a video, and then those videos can be combined. I think that would be faster for you.
Okay.
Because we can actually, it'll be a separate export project for each one. But if each one of those projects is exported as a video, then we could airdrop all 27 to your laptop. We could drop all 27 of them into iMovie, and they can just line up. Or we could even do it on the iPad.
I see.
I think that's a faster workflow.
Yeah, because I've already got them all on my iPad.
Exactly. So we're continuing to troubleshoot as we debrief this. But that, I think that would be my recommended workflow, is rather than combine and explain everything as of the projects, export each one to your camera roll so that you have a video of it, and then we can airdrop those. In iMovie on the iPad, we may need to use an iPad that has bigger space.
Okay.
Yeah. But that way, you've just got 27 video clips to put together.
So another iMovie.
The other benefit of that is you already have those as separate clips. And again, I'd be happy to help you with that. But if we wanted to do something where we did a geo map and whatever, then they're separate clips.
That'd be interesting to do.
All right. So in addition to, lessons learned, in addition to learning that you got to think about.
But would they, the question, would they be able to, would the recipient be able to manipulate a movie like they would a project? And Explain Everything app.
Well,
because you're going to be touching it and listening to things, right?
So
to start the clip.
So it will just play through as a movie,
right? So I need them to stop and start and listen. So each of the students, the recipient pal, is going to see the four things on their kid's slide, and they're going to play the movie, play the audio.
See, in order for them to do that, they would actually have to be viewing it inside the Explain Everything app.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Their teacher has access.
So you basically want like a web page where it has four different elements that they can interact with.
Or I'll have the teacher present it. So she has Explain Everything.
Right.
And then she can show, she'll be showing it.
Yeah. Okay. So in that respect, I see why it might be desirable to have a single project. We'll have to look at the export options and see, because I haven't thought of Explain Everything projects as one that you would share to another
as project.
Everything,
right.
Yeah, to open. So yes, if you want to have that kind of functionality, then you probably would need to have that and Explain Everything. But anyway, this is why we're doing this debrief, far as talking through all this and what's possible. It would be nice if Explain Everything had an export feature where it was like, export as an interactive web page.
Right.
And then, it would have that kind of functionality.
Right.
So, And you're the blue one, you think? I don't think I have the new one on this. I think the blue one is the old one and the white one. Because that's one of the confusing things, too, is we've got three versions of Explain Everything now.
And different colors for the version.
Right. So this is helpful for me to understand, though, because what you're wanting them to experience is, for each individual student, you'd like them to be able to select the different elements for each one.
Otherwise, it's the teacher who has an Explain Everything account.
Right.
And she can just show it.
Right.
Go through a slideshow.
Yeah.
And each student watches theirs.
Yeah.
So.
I know that if you export each project, then you're going to have that video.
Right.
And that video is going to be able to play separately.
Right.
So.
But it wouldn't enact the individual options on each slide.
It wouldn't allow you to change the order of those?
Well, no, but like you wouldn't be able to listen to their presentation of themselves.
Sure. It should play every element in there.
Oh, it would?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Oh. But you wouldn't be able to choose the order. Like if I'm looking at the slide, if I'm looking at the slide, I could say, oh, I want to do this.
I just didn't know if there was a big triangle, play triangle. Would it automatically play that?
Uh-huh, it should. It should take every element that you have on there that's recorded, and it should play them.
Oh, well, then that's...
We'll have to try it and see.
I think that's...
Okay,
that sufficient.
Might work.
Yeah.
That might work.
Yeah.
Okay, so that way exporting, because the nice thing about that is explain everything gets out of the equation.
Well, yeah, you know, each
student, they can just play it through the web.
The recipients can all go and find their,
yes.
I can probably even label when each student gets their chance to talk, so they can just fast forward to their pen pal.
It could be a single video, or it could be separate ones. Probably even easier to have separate ones. We could have a playlist we made on YouTube,
right.
And then it could have each student separately.
So. Yeah, that's good.
All right. Well, hence the need for the debrief to talk about all these issues. So just to kind of wrap up, I know your family's ready to go. In addition to the file size question of, like, how big do you want this, what would you say some of your other lessons learned are? And as you think about this project next year, I know you're going to be shifting gears to upper division and stuff, but as you think about this kind of project, what are you thinking about perhaps differently now that you've had these different experiences? We're glad that the technology was more positive, but obviously there's still challenges to be overcome.
Just things to get used to. I would like to be able to use more of the illustrative options on it, because I didn't really touch those, like storytelling type things,
right.
Voiceover storytelling, right. You know, because there's a lot of storytelling apps.
Uh-huh. Well, even drawing inside the app too,
right.
And replay.
And I didn't
sketching.
Go there, right?
Yeah, right.
So I think that would, I mean, storytelling. Like I'd like to see how Explain Everything, if it's better than other storytelling apps. You know, what are its extra options?
Right.
Because that's what essentially I'll be going and like you know. Using the more in-depth creativity behind all the options on each slide, you know.
Right.
Exploring those. But it would be presentations type things, presenting in greater detail Oklahoma City, going around town.
Right.
Making a collage,
sure.
Present places, and then using the audio functions to do narrate.
And can you speak to the value of having your students recording their voices and recording in French?
It is good. They have the chance to practice pronouncing. You know, I did Google Voice as an assignment recently, where I gave my kids a Google Voice phone number that I created. They thought that was amazing. So if you want to do another random exercise to get your kids excited.
So you mean they left you voicemails?
They left me voicemails. So I set
That's
it up.
That's awesome.
It was
I didn't
great.
Know you did that.
They loved it. They thought, you know, part of what they loved was that they were going to call their teacher.
Okay.
They couldn't get over that. So some of the 8th grade kids, they're like, what? Because I didn't explain it. I just said, I just want you to call me. Here's my phone number. Leave a message. And they didn't know how to respond to that. We're going to call our teacher and leave a message? That's so weird. But they loved it.
Okay.
So they wrote down. So anyway, I gave them something like a topic. They had like a 45-second thing to talk about. And they just, and you can set up your phone to where it goes straight to your, it doesn't ring on my phone.
You go Google Voice.
It goes straight to my email. And it sends me an email to let me know when they have sent me something.
Okay.
So then you have automatic record of who has called you, who has not. And then I can play it the next day. But anyway, aside from being, you know.
So it was emailing you the recorded voice.
It emails me the recorded voice.
Wow.
It has nothing to do with my phone, so it doesn't bother you at all.
Right.
So then I can go home and listen to it. I can write them a message, send it back to them. I did that a few times. I would write them a little text message, just send them
so
a text
So you get
message.
Their phone number then when they do that too?
So I do. I get their phone number. That's right. They loved it. It was really, and you know, part of the thing is that for a language teacher, you think, well, they're not memorizing it. They're just going to read what they wrote. Which was fine because the objective of the lesson for the language from a linguistic point of view was, are you in control of what you're saying? You know, and that's a part of the problem as language learners is that you say things and you're not too sure if it's right or not, and you just sound that your voice quivers. You don't sound articulate. So being able to be in control and articulate what you're saying, even if you wrote it down, you really are learning what that was. Because I would ask some of the kids, and they could remember what they had written and said on the phone, because speaking on the phone is really hard in a language. in a foreign language. It's one of the fears that us language learners have, is calling people on the phone, because it's so hard to use your voice. And then it's kind of like the final test is speaking, you know. So if you can say something, that means you've learned it. And granted, they are reading what they wrote, but still, they're in control. They're practicing articulation. And that was what I told them I was grading on. Are you enunciating? Is the speed correct? And so, and it was a great tool. They enjoyed it. Google Voice was great. So
that's awesome.
I was happy.
So you are definitely an advocate of the recorded voice.
So the recorded voice, the value of that. So they can hear it, they can listen to it, and you can see progress. So in 9 months, you can go back to that. It's kind of like keeping a journal. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, if you start keeping a journal when you're learning a language, your first sentences are going to be broken, there are going to be mistakes.
Yeah.
But 10 months later, you see progress, and progress motivates. You know, progress motivates. And so that's.
I guess you could flip some of those into Seesaw if you wanted to
sure.
as well. I think you have to put it on a picture. So you'd have to have some kind of assignment picture that you could make or a drawing.
Right.
But then you.
The thing I didn't want to do with Seesaw, I thought about that, but is that it's just quicker for the student to pick up a phone.
Yeah.
Dial it.
Well, my dissertation
and give
was
it.
About a phone casting project.
Right. Yeah.
And so being able to pick up your
it
phone,
so
dial a number,
because I've done the Seesaw project.
So much
I've done
easier.
The Seesaw project where I had a picture, I did an audio, they did an audio back, because you have to, I mean, it's just, it's good for its things, but this was quick and easy. And it was new. The novelty of it was the surprise. It was just kind of like, wow. You know,
of course.
And I thought it was successful, so I'll use that. And so I think Google, you know, explain everything, exploring their video and voiceover options, and then using the illustration behind it, using it at different levels.
And I think that's one of the things that is both good and challenging about the app is there's so much to it, right? It's not a real simple app.
Right.
I mean, you can use it in basic ways, but you know there's a lot more depth to it.
And I want to use it as a teaching tool for the students. So my students haven't used it as a teaching tool.
Right. Right.
Per se. They haven't taught me something through it. So using the pen and using, you know, the different images.
Well, and even sketch, I love sketch notes.
Right.
So even the idea of sketching and then having it, you know, play that back because there's the Procreate app, which is one we work with a little bit, will replay your sketch. So the idea of then bringing that in to explain everything, when I've done this before, and then I'm going to narrate over that.
Right.
I'm going to, you know, sync my voice and that and stuff. So.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Did you go on a spring break trip this year?
No.
With the students? Or have you traveled? Are you going to?
I've traveled last June, and my next one will be in 2 years to travel.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good deal.
So it is good.
Well, it'll be exciting to think about these tools as well.
It will be.
How students can record. The whole idea of story chasing came from the idea of recording video, recording audio. There's stories out there.
Yeah.
And part of what you're thinking about, you know, in terms of even if it's touring the school or the locations and stuff like that, I mean, story, you know, what kinds of stories can be.
Yeah, it's great. And, you know, and the last thing, all these projects that I do, they're generally culminating projects.
Right.
So I do a lot of scaffolding first.
Sure.
They know the language. They're more familiar. I wouldn't do this as a first thing in a new unit.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this is a culminating project, so they feel comfortable using what they're using.
But it's an exciting new and novel way for them to demonstrate their knowledge and their skills.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. Thanks so much
for talking
to me.
Moving at the Speed of Creativity podcast are independently produced by Wesley Fryer and are licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution only license. Learn more at www.speedcreativity.org.